For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
We are well into patio season, Leaf fans, and since our last show, the Leafs have made some additions to their coaching and management staff, as well as some decisions, which most of you have probably heard about, being made with their goaltending.
That's right. So to start with, GM Brad Treliving added Derek Clancy as another assistant general manager, player personnel, which brings the number of assistant GMs to 5. So it's interesting that they, I don't know, I guess the people that were there to this point were all of Dubas's leftovers, minus Spezza. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess just to run through them here. So there's Derek Clancy, who's he was on Treliving's staff in Calgary. Mm-hmm. And the main thing, though, that I found out, just to give a bit of background to the listeners for him, is that he spent 14 seasons with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And so he was part of he's on the Stanley Cup. He was part of their cup winning years, and he was the director of player personnel there. So he does have definitely a huge background, or good background. And the other, I guess, 4 assistant GMs are Brandon Pridham, who we all know, Dr. Haley Wickenheiser, who we also know, Ryan Hardy, who's in charge of the Marlies staff there, and Daryl Metcalf, and he's part of hockey research and development. But what they did, apparently, the Leafs last year, they changed it. Kind of made sense. I read Kyle Cushman is from The Score. He wrote that last year the Leafs kind of changed up their front office, and instead of labeling or giving a heading of director, they are naming these executives as assistant GMs instead of directors, basically. So It kind of made sense after that. I was like, why do we need 5 assistant GMs? But it kind of makes sense when I read that. So yeah, it's obviously it's somebody, like you said, it's somebody that Treliving, it's somebody he picked, basically. So it's just the start of that. So yeah.
We'll see. Obviously, it's good for him to have someone who he's familiar with in a role beside him. And I'm sure that they're all going to work great together as a team to continue to build this team. So we're going to discuss the Leafs goaltending situation a little later in the show. First, we wanted to give a shout out to a charity hockey game that is being held at 7 p.m. on August 23rd in Brampton, Ontario's CAA Center. Hockey Night in Brampton is back this year and will be held as a benefit to raise funds for the expansion of William Osler Health System's Peel Memorial Campus. So it's going to be creating a much needed second hospital for Brampton. The game is going to feature Doug Gilmore and Wendell Clark as coaches, and players such as John Tavares, our captain, Mark Giordano, and Brampton native Sean Monahan will be there, to name a few. So tickets are just $15 and can be purchased through Ticketmaster. So what a better way to get your hockey fix in the summer. So get your tickets today, and we are going to be there. So you might see a Ladies Talking Leafs sighting if you do decide to come.
Yeah, that'll be great. I thought Dougie and Wendell might be on the ice for this one.
But yeah, I thought they were going to be at first as well, but no, they're deciding to take on the coaching duties. So
All right.
Anyway, well, let's get into the show, and we're going to start with the best of patio season in the NHL. And there is a lot of Leafs news to get to. And for our third period segment, we welcome to the show David Alter from SportsIllustrated.com and the Hockey News. David is also the host of the podcast Rink Wide Toronto. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
All right. So we're going to have some fun now. Start off with the best patio season for NHL players or Leaf players, where each of us, me and Sal, we're each going to pick a couple of players that we think have shown some fun that they're having in the summertime through their social media, obviously. So my first one, I actually just saw this. I was combing through Twitter and mostly on Instagram anyways, and I could not believe I missed this, but Freddie Anderson, he was fishing in Alaska with Philip Grubauer, I guess is a goalie friend of his, which I didn't know either, of the Seattle Kraken. He's Grubauer's of the Seattle Kraken. So yeah, I just thought it was, I didn't know how I missed that. But anyways, it looked like he was having a very relaxing time, just like the way Freddie's always relaxed. He just is leaning back with his little fishing rod and enjoying life that way. And then the other guy I picked from the Leafs, I picked David Kampf. He's been enjoying his time with his wife and baby boy in Austria. And it was the place that he was at, I don't know, it was beautiful. It was like a spa kind of place and in with the mountains. And I don't know, I just thought, of course, it's something that we most likely can't afford, but it's nice looking at. Seeing how these players enjoy themselves in the off season.
Yeah, so definitely that fishing trip is just totally in line with Freddie's chill vibe. And Kampf, he's always going someplace. And I guess he chooses the beach sometimes, and now he's at the mountains. So So I picked a different Swede. Different Swede. Anderson's not a Swede. I picked a Swede for mine, and that is William Nylander. So everyone's all up in arms about his contract, but he is definitely doesn't seem to look like he's worried about it at all. And he is soaking up the good life and having fun with his buds at Lollapalooza in Sweden. So I'm always seeing him in his like linen pants, open shirt, looking very, very Willy, Willy Styles, and usually always with his brother, Rasmus Sandin, and some other guy who I don't know who he is. So it's obviously a friend of theirs. Yeah. And the second person I picked is a new Leaf, Max Domi. I'm just giving him a shout out because he's been making the rounds on Toronto Sports Talk Radio since being picked up, and I've never heard anybody sound more excited to be a Leaf in my life. Yeah. I mean, maybe Michael Bunting is a close second, but he sounds like a kid the way he talks. He's just so excited and all smiles every picture that you see. And the latest one is all decked out in Leafs practice gear, but still wearing the Dallas Stars pants. I think that he was with Tyler Seguin, and Seguin was giving him the gears for wearing those pants. So anyway.
No longer allowed to wear that color, right?
No.
According to Tyler Seguin.
So it's a kind of an odd combination, with the green and the blue together. But anyways.
Going back to Willie, I mean, he's always chill. That's just his style, right? It's just like he's not worried about, he's enjoying his time, he's not thinking about the contract situation, so that's good for him, and that's why we've said before we think he's a good fit here, because he just goes about his business and enjoys life sort of thing, and then nothing really bothers him when it comes to the all the chatter and everything when it comes to the hockey side of things. So but one thing we did want to mention too, so most NHL players probably think or do think that the best patio season is getting married. That's what most of these NHL players have been doing from what we've seen on social media. And just yesterday, we want to actually congratulate Mitch Marner and his now wife, Stephanie Lachance Marner. We're going to put in his name there as the last name. And yeah, so it was, it looked like a fantastic time. Mitch doing his thing, his little dance entrance into the, what do you call it? The venue, I guess. And yeah, it looked like a fun time. All former Leafs were there and the current Leafs too. And yeah. And what did you think of her dress, of Stephanie Lachance's dress?
Well, first I want to say that, you know, they came in all dancing and stuff to music, and Mitch was spinning her around, and he made a very conscious effort to not step on her dress. She had a much more, is strapless, but much more traditional type of dress, you know, with a flowing train, and it was quite long, and he did his best to not step on it, and he didn't. I thought it was beautiful. She looked beautiful. Yeah. They're a beautiful couple. A lot of people were very thankful that he ditched the hat for this, event. So, but yeah, they looked, lovely, and everybody looked like they were having a great time.
Yeah. 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 No, I think a lot of, I liked, personally, I did like the table with Tyler Bozak, JVR, Matt Martin, and Jake Gardner. Jake Gardner, he can really move, man, with the dance moves.
Well, I mean, he was a great skater. So maybe there's something to that, because obviously Mitch can dance too. He's a really good skater.
Yeah.
Gardner had the moves on the ice and off the ice apparently as well. So there you go. It's nice that they're all still so close together. And I did. It's sort of sad in a way that an event like this highlights all of his friends. It's like, if everybody had to do with hockey, I'm sure that she had a lot of her friends there too. You know, anyways, it just, this just highlights his side of things, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you know, while the players are enjoying their summer, the Leafs GM Brad Treliving has been keeping busy. And for our third period segment, we have David Alter on as our guest to talk about the Leafs off-season news.
So for our third period segment, we are welcoming to Ladies Talking Leafs Patio, David Alter. David is the Maple Leafs reporter for SI.com and the Hockey News.
So you'll also see David on NHL Network giving his thoughts on what is going on with the Leafs. And he has his own podcast, Rinkwide Toronto. Welcome, David, and thanks for coming on the show.
I'm so thrilled to be on. Like, I cannot tell you how much I'm excited about this. Just kind of interacting with you guys and just, you know, I was like, should I reach out to come on or should I wait for an invite? I didn't know. And then the summer got busy. I thought the summer wasn't going to be busy. And then it got, as you know, got very busy. Yes. And so I was really happy when I got your email last week to come on. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. We are really, really glad to have you here. So with that, since everything's been so busy, we're going to get right into it. So Chris, take it away.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, let's start off with the goaltending, I guess, because that's the most recent updates, the Leafs goaltending. So what I was wondering was, with Matt Murray, how is it that he was reported like healthy and ready to go against Florida? I think it was against the Panthers. Yeah. In that series as a backup anyways. And now he's on the LTIR out for the season. Like, is there some sort of, I don't know, working behind the scenes by the doctors there to say, like, all of a sudden, I guess he's not healthy, obviously.
Yeah, so it is a tricky thing. Like, the thing about this, like, the most political answer about all of this in terms of why this is probably not going to get forensically investigated or anything like that, is the fact that concussion issues can kind of come and go. Like, it's one of those things where, especially if you have a history of them, like, they can be recurring. And if a doctor deems something, and that is what they deem, then the Leafs can do this. Now, it's important to note also that the Leafs just announced that this was their intention. They don't necessarily have to do it between now and October 3rd. Like, I actually got a clarifying email because a lot of people were kind of saying, he's on LTI. He's like, well, he's not on LTI. He'll be on LTI when the time comes, when that actually matters, when they start doing the daily cap accumulation. But the Leafs put that out right at noon that day, and that was the exact same minute people were waiting for Matt Murray to show up on waivers for the purposes of buyout, because that was that exact window. And okay. So that was, I think, the Leafs kind of getting ahead of it, having an evaluation with Murray and realizing, okay, this is what our intent is going to be. And that was just kind of effectively saying, without saying, we're not buying him out. And so they have this, and yeah, he's got these issues with concussion. And yes, it can be said that he did end the season. You know, it was quickly pointed out that Florida had a bunch of guys playing hurt and may not start the season. Guys play hurt, even though they shouldn't, all the time, depending on what the stakes are at. And so I'm sure there's a lot of this that kind of goes around. But when it all gets said and done, this is the absolute best case scenario for all parties involved, because the Leafs get maximum cap space. They don't get a cap charge for next season of $2 million that they would have had if they bought him out. They also have a deep LTI pool to work with now. And they can also communicate to Murray that, look, just because you're on LTI doesn't mean you can't come off LTI. And that happens all the time. And Vegas is the classic example of that, where it, like, LTI to start the season just means that Matt Murray has to miss 10 games in 21 days. A lot can happen with so many different injuries that if Samsonov or someone else gets hurt and they need to interchange the money and they get the go-ahead that Murray could come back and could get activated, he could be at some point. Like, it's not ruled out. LTI, there was a lot of he's done for the season. I don't get the sense that that's 100% definitive. Everything is a punt right now. And so this is essentially punting that decision and giving the Leafs the most cap space. And Murray wins too, because if he was bought out and deemed healthy, he would only get 2/3 of his $8 million salary for the upcoming season that is split between Toronto and Ottawa. And in this case, he gets it all. So everyone kind of wins here, despite how it kind of looks. But with concussions, it is the most unpredictable thing that it's hard to prove against the diagnosis than it would be maybe in other cases, like when Joffrey Lupo was like, they won't let me play, and complaining on his on his Instagram. And then that led to a whole investigation. So it's a little different. I get the conjecture and all this other stuff, but teams around the league do this all the time. And the fact of the matter is, the NHL permits it. And if the NHL permits it, then there's really nothing to complain about.
100%. Yeah, so I guess he's not on Robidoux Island, then, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, that was so it's funny, because I did mention that. I wrote about that everyone was kind of saying that the difference with Robidoux Island and what happened there was Robidoux was like at training camp, looked fine, and then out of nowhere disappeared. And it was kind of uncharacteristic, because we had not really seen that before on the beat. And it was also Lou Lamoriello who was in charge. And so that's kind of where all that stuff came around. And then he wasn't around to speak, and there were no updates. And I think Robidoux even said after the fact that he did have some wear and tear issues on the knee. And so the problem with this LTI thing is that if a doctor says you're hurt and they can just say that, there is different determinations that can be made that you can hurt and play versus you're hurt and can't play. And then it's just up to how you want to interpret it for your own benefit. I'll give you an example. Do you remember in the NBA when they traded Vince Carter, the Raptors traded Vince Carter to the Nets, and they got like Alonzo Mourning and this whole package?
Yes.
And Alonzo Mourning had like a medical issue. But when he got to the Raptors, he's like, I'm not going to play for you guys, and cited the medical issue, and you couldn't argue against it. Mm-hmm. But then he was moved to another team, and he was fine. Played. Yeah. And he played. Like, because it's up to the player, and it's up to all that stuff at that point, and what is mutually beneficial. So, like, this doesn't even just happen in the NHL. It happens everywhere, where the level of how much you're hurt and how much a team wants you to play and the degrees of that are so widespread. But for LTI rules, it's just, is this an injury that can be conceivably 10 games in 21 days? Yes or no? And how a player interprets it. And clearly the player is going along with it, because remember the Leafs had Jared Cowan, and they had to, Jared Cowan was claiming hurt and the Leafs said he wasn't hurt. And they had to kind of go through a third party. Eventually the league sought the Leafs' way that there wasn't substantial evidence from Cowan that brought that. So everything is about what both sides will go along with combined with the interpretation. That's just the reality of it all. And but people like to, you know, the Leafs are the Leafs, and we get, they'll get the reaction, both positive and negative. Yeah. And so this kind of happens. I wasn't surprised that this was the end result, but the only thing that really surprised me is that Matt Murray's health kind of drew the ire of the league when they were doing those backup goalies toward the end of the season, which is why I thought maybe the Leafs might avoid any sort of conflict with the league with Murray again and just go the buyout route. But clearly they found this path, and the NHL's permitted it. So away we go.
Well, you know, I think it is smart on their part, because the guy is good in spot starts. So like, if you can play him, you know, in shorter stints, get some good games out of him, like down the road when they've basically massaged the cap a little bit more, and it's, you know, not going to harm you here and there. And like you said, with injuries. So,
yeah. And Samsonov and Wall both have a history of injuries. So like, it wouldn't surprise me if out of nowhere there's an issue with one or two of those guys, and they're like, hey, let's see if Matt Murray is feeling good to go and we can unlock the LTI, because that money can be interchanged all the time. I wrote about this. I cited the fact that, you know, Frederik Andersen had an injury all season long on LTI, but they were able to activate him on the final day because Bogosian and Hyman both had injuries toward the end of the season that equaled Frederik Andersen's cap hit, that they were actually able to get Andersen in one game before the end of the season against the Ottawa Senators in the event Jack Campbell couldn't handle the playoffs, that they had a rep for Frederik Andersen in that 2021 season. So it happens. It came at a cost of not being able to use Hyman and Bogosian toward the end of the year until the playoffs, but it happens. And Vegas did it. They had Mark Stone waiting, and then all of a sudden they were able to activate him while other guys got moved around. The moving around of the LTI money is just a symptom of the cap. And it's kind of a don't hate the player, hate the game scenario.
You really remember everything going back to Jared Cowan. Also,
I have a strange memory. And then the Cowan one, I didn't actually remember offhand. This was in my research and like trying to remember Leafs' history of maneuvering around the cap. Because I remember last year when the Leafs signed Cali Yarncroke, and they're like, well, now they're over the cap, they have to trade Kerfoot. And I wrote a thing that said, no, like, they don't have to do anything right now. Yes, they're over the theoretical cap, but they do not have to do anything until they have to do anything. And they didn't trade Kerfoot. They kept everybody. They had an LTI injury with Muzzin 4 games in, and then it wasn't even an issue anymore at that point. So injuries can happen, and you do not have to be under the cap until the day before the regular season. And there's 3 weeks of preseason and like 7 or 8 games where anything can happen to anybody. Ilya Mikheyev got hurt and had to miss like several months because of a preseason injury that helped them with the cap. So a lot of people forget this. They just look at the surface of it, and it's easy. If you don't work in math, I have a math background. So if you don't like look at this kind of stuff, and you're just a fan and you don't care about that sort of element, you see the headlines and it looks like they're over the cap, but they don't have to do anything until they have to do anything. And for me, this Murray thing was strictly a punt until the next thing and getting under the cap for the next season.
All right. Cool. You got any more on this, Chris?
Nope. Let's get on to Samsonov.
That was very thorough. Thank you. So
you're welcome.
For all of the cap things, we know you are a go-to now. All right. So you mentioned Samsonov. So he had his arbitration case, which ended up with a 1-year deal worth $3.55 million. So on your most recent podcast, you said that you felt that the Leafs lost this arbitration case. So we're wondering, why do you think that they lost?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough because the other thing with arbitration is it's hard with goalies because there isn't a lot to go on. There's strict rules in terms of what both the player and the team can argue. Mm-hmm. And so I think there probably wasn't a good recognition from the Leafs side in terms of the actual goalie cases that they can argue to get down to that 2.4 number. So they looked at Alex Georgiev and Vitek Vanacek as the comparisons. And so when you look at those guys, those were RFA deals that were signed by Colorado and Washington, I believe it was, or no, New Jersey. They traded, yeah. Vanacek was traded to Jersey and inherited the arbitration case. Well, they avoided arbitration. Both of those guys signed identical 3-year, $10.2 million contracts. So that put the AAV at $3.4 million. Mm-hmm. Now, what I think the Leafs were trying to argue there was that AAV bought two extra years of unrestricted free agency. So in their mind, that 1 year would have been a lot lower of a cap number, closer to the 2.4. But what ended up happening was Samsonov's camp looked at Ottinger and Saros as their comparables. And yeah, those were years of UFAs bought. But in Ottinger's case, like the save percentage was kind of similar. And his actual salary for this year upcoming was like 4.8, something close to Samsonov's asking price. And so why I think the Leafs lost this case is because that AAV not only came in higher than the two comparables that the Leafs tried to argue in both Vanacek and Georgiev, right, but they bought no years of UFAs. He'll just walk straight in. So from an asset management standpoint, I thought it was a bit of a failure that you had a guy who did this. Maybe they have different opinions of him and maybe they're justified in it. But for all the years that they've struggled to find a good, solid first year, a guy who really just fell into their lap, really, that they couldn't buy at least 1 year of unrestricted free agency. That to me was the big loss for an AAV that came in higher than those two other guys that that got more term along with it. So for those reasons, I thought it was a failure. Okay. I look at things from a goalie standpoint. I was a goalie growing up too. Mm. So I kind of lean a little bit more into that position than maybe most other reporters do. Mm-hmm. So like I'll admit that slight bias, but even then I'm just looking at it. It's like you've had so many problems with this position that like I don't know how that year didn't give you the faith to give him a little bit more, or at least buy one more year. But now if he has the same kind of year, he's just going to walk because they're just not going to meet his price. Like I don't see it happening. So
do you think would it have been different if Dubas was still here? Do you think?
Possibly.
Like, I just wonder if this was like a bit of a gamble on Treliving's part, because maybe he could argue, they could argue that, well, you now have to show me because I wasn't here really at the helm or whatever. Like
I do think so, because Dubas is somewhat of a loyal guy in that regard, and Dubas made it very clear, and Samsonov confirmed it later on, that when he became a UFA after the Capitals failed to qualify him, that there were offers for him for more years, and he chose to come to Toronto on a 1 year to bet on himself, to show that he was worth more and that he can turn it into something. And I feel maybe Dubas would have rewarded him a little bit more, but there would still be the cap issues. And now I'm sure Dubas would know how to get out from under those, but it's kind of hard to know because the Leafs under Dubas have not really had a good strategy of goaltending to begin with.
True.
Like when you look at that track record, and then he moves to Pittsburgh and he gives Tristan Jarry 5 years times 5.3, which was to me the most puzzling move. Like all the other moves that Dubas did in Pittsburgh. And I'm like, okay, that kind of makes sense. You have these core guys. And then the goaltending one, to commit to 5 years when term was a problem with guys like Jack Campbell and everything else before, that I thought to myself, this is counterintuitive. Like, I guess it's the devil they know versus the devil they don't. But to me, it's hard to know, because I do think maybe he would have rewarded Samsonov in that regard. But then I see what he did in Tristan Jarry in Pittsburgh, and it totally flips everything, to the point where I liked Kyle Dubas's tenure in Toronto. But the one thing that was pretty clear to me, and it's not a Dubas thing, it's across the league, is that they just never really handled the goaltending position fairly well, and it didn't really have the same seat at the table that the other part of the game did. And that's something that's happening across the league. So it's not necessarily on him, but maybe because of that relationship where he came on 1 year, that maybe they would have got that settled outside of arbitration. It's rare for Dubas. I have to go back, but I don't think Dubas has ever had a case go to arbitration. It's always kind of been settled.
Sound familiar, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of been settled outside. So it's hard to say. It'll be curious to see.
So like you kind of already mentioned this. So you think that Samsonov will test the market then, given the whole arbitration thing?
I think it depends. I mean, I think it's January 1 when he could sign a contract extension under the provision of the CBA. So I think it's going to depend on a lot of things. I think it's going to depend on Bradtree Living's opinion of him. Like, it's going to be like seeing how he is in the room, habits, all that other stuff, how he works with Curtis Sanford, what the coaching staff looks like. What kind of changes the team undergoes this year. It's going to be part and parcel of everything. So I think it's really going to come down to just how strong he comes out of the gate, if he can stay healthy, if he can get that threshold of playing more than half the games, which he has not really done. I think he did that this year. He played 42 and there's 82 games. So he just barely hit that. So yeah. If he can like get to like the 50 mark, I think that, or if he is at least on pace and doesn't get hurt. The only knock on Samsonov was that he was hurt a lot and he was playing hurt through some stuff last season. Mm-hmm. So I think they have to kind of figure out all of that as well. And in terms of seeing what they have in him and probably most importantly, is Joseph Woll ready to be a 1A guy? Like if he is and he's ready to take that leap, then you know you have a different cap commitment that you can make to someone like him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it was a very small sample size for Joseph Woll, that's for
exactly.
sure. So, I mean, cross our fingers that he will be one of the, it's been a while since we've had our own draft pick and to actually develop into a full-time goalie, whether it be
James Reimer, kind of, like the last.
Yeah, so, last one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so final question about the goaltending before we get on. I guess the Leafs will obviously probably want to get a third goalie. I mean, you're mentioning how it could go back and forth with Murray, but let's just say Murray's out of the picture. Do you think, like, do you see any fit for any of the goalies? There's not a huge goalie market out there.
So people say that, and people are quick to point out that the Leafs have a terrible time adding third goalies because especially, like, who are you going to get that isn't waivers eligible at this point? And then goalies are the first to go on waivers at the cut of the season. So do you really want to do that now? Like you probably have to wait for injuries before you can do anything with the goalie stuff. The Leafs had Curtis McElhinney and Calvin Pickard, 3 and 4 goalies on their roster at that point, get claimed on waivers on the same day before the start of the 1920 season. That was the one under Babcock, his final year. And so that happens all the time. They had Aaron Dell on their roster. They were carrying 3 goalies because they were afraid to put him on waivers and waiting for strategic time to do it so no one would claim him, and he still got claimed. Yeah. So, like, it's just, I don't see them getting a third goalie that they would just sign and then all of a sudden just lose anyway. Like, goalies are, teams have, injuries all the time, and they'll look at the Leafs right away. If they put a goalie on there, they're going to lose them for nothing. So what's really the point of doing that until maybe later in the season if you do start to have some issues. You can kind of look to try and get a goalie off someone else, off the waiver wire, if that is a real concern for you. So yeah. I don't particularly see them, especially now with their cap constraints, signing a goalie. If it happens, then they're doing it solely knowing that this guy is gone or there's been some sort of nudge that Matt Murray is not at all an option for the upcoming season. But even then, I just don't see, just given what's happened with waivers, I think they have to learn from that and just kind of wait things out with their two goalies.
All right.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see on that one.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So let's move on from all this goaltending talk and talk about the next big story that is always out there. And is there any news on Nylander and the contract negotiations? So we heard that talks have kind of stalled. He's, we obviously all know that he's looking for something in the range of $10 million per season. And now that the Sebastian Aho deal just happened, do you think that will have any impact on what happens?
I think it will have a mild impact, but I think the big domino to drop is Austin Matthews. Like, that's really what it is. Like, you look at all the pieces that are in there. It's the middle of the summer right now. So if nothing was going to get done in the beginning, probably nothing's going to get done now until closer to the start of training camp or at training camp, when it actually does become an in-your-face distraction, when you have people like me in the scrums and asking about it. So like right now they can kind of, you know, just keep their distance and do all that other stuff. But to me, I think Austin Matthews and getting that deal done is probably going to be the thing that kind of moves things forward. Because even if you have an understanding and what you're going to do for Austin Matthews, I think William Nylander needs to see it. If there's a marginal increase and there's a long-term commitment, well, then the Leafs can actually show, look, we're running out of space for you. Here's what our best player did. And so this is the line. And so only then can I see a situation where if you're Nylander or you're his agent, that you start to come down a little bit from that stance. These numbers are always like the starting points. And right now there really isn't an urgency from his side because, you know, you're under contract for this year. Teams kind of play out and go through this all the time. And, you know, maybe they can use the pressure of Toronto as like pressure to the other side to try and get something done. Like, it's, you know, these are all games that kind of get played back and forth all the time. So I see this as a situation where Austin Matthews probably has to be under commitment so that there is a real contract you can throw into them and tell the Nylander camp, this is the line. This is where it starts. What happens around the league probably doesn't matter as much to Nylander because, or his reps, because what the Leafs do and what the rest of the league have done have not been congruent for the last 5-6 years. So I think it's at a holding pattern right now until you have Matthews signed, sealed, and delivered, or at least a verbal understanding with Matthews corroborating that to some sort of form or fashion, that's how you can get so-and-so signed. Because even after that, then you have to worry about Tavares, maybe not so much you don't have to worry about him, but you have Marner as well. And then all the other things you want to factor for 25, 26. So, I don't see it happening. I don't see anything moving huge on that, my personal opinion, until Austin Matthews is committed, because I don't know why you would if you're Nylander's case. If you wear his shoes, why would you? Why would you come down from it if Austin Matthews hasn't moved from that position yet?
Well, he says he wants to be a Leaf, so.
Well, there is that, but right? Like, so, look,
and
sure,
he loves it here and all that.
By all accounts, everything will probably get done.
Yeah.
But it needs to be on pen to paper, and the term needs to be known. Like, that's the only way you can bring comparables to kind of form the line. Here's the line. Let's go down and move from there. And so they don't have that right now. And that lack of uniformity is, I think, what will cause this to be a story for some time.
It would be nice for one of these guys to just say, you know, I want to be here. Let's just sign and get on with it. Right. It just doesn't seem to happen in Toronto, though, for whatever reason. But with Matthews, do you think, I guess, seeing that you're saying that, and a lot of people are saying that he needs to sign first, like, do you think that'll happen before the season, though, like, starts, hopefully, or you think it's going to keep going?
I think so.
Nobody's really talking about him because everybody's saying it's basically guaranteed that he's going to sign. But I mean,
I just wonder if, like, the daily questions about it at training camp kind of force it to move along.
Right.
Like, right now, it's so easy to escape. Nylander's in Sweden. Austin Matthews is in Arizona. It is so easy to not be anywhere close to this stuff if you're them. and not right. let it be a, like your agents can handle it. And that's why you pay them an agent's fee to kind of deal that. And then unlike in Marner's case, you know, Marner lives in the city. Like it's one of those things where it's, I'm sure you can tune it out, but it's harder to tune out. Like it's one of those things where if you're not local from here, like you don't quite get it the same way. And so you saw that in Nylander's negotiations with Dubas when it went to December 1st of 2018, I think it was. Yeah. Like whenever he signed that deal.
It was right at 5 p.m.
Right,
yeah.
but he was in Sweden. It was so easy with the time zone and all that stuff, even with the hockey season going on, to just kind of be away from it. The only pressure is maybe you're getting texts from your buddies being like, hey, we miss you and all that other stuff. But like outside of that, if you're that far away from the home market, it's very easy to feel like you're in a different world. So I think because they're under contract, because they'll be there, because they'll be made available, that will change the dynamic. And you know, it was funny. Austin Matthews got that question last year at the beginning of camp, and he respectfully appreciated the question, but wasn't going to comment any further on it. And it was his right to do so because he wasn't even eligible for a year. So it didn't, like he said, he liked it being here and he said what he had to say, but he wasn't obligated to answer anything else about it because by the rules, you can't do anything anyway. So why would you back yourself into a corner? So now it'll be a little bit different because he is eligible. And so the question will kind of be there. It'll be interesting to see for sure.
It'll be from you and the rest of the media there, right? In the scrums, like you
probably,
said.
Probably, yeah. Probably.
Every day.
Not every day. Well, I don't know. We'll see what the dynamic looks like. I would imagine that Matthews and the Leafs will be pragmatic about it. But I just don't know how and where and everything needs to go. And there's been a lot of change this season. So I can understand processing everything. Like it's not like Dubas was brought back and everything's been run back. There's different people in the front office now. So we'll see how it goes.
There's lots of changes, like you're saying. I guess like even with like the forward group, obviously now with Bertuzzi there and Max Domi, obviously John Klingberg on the D, but
all 1 year commitments. So like, it's hard to know beyond that, right? Like there's a lot of cap space right now that opens up next year, like the most ever. Plus a huge cap increase, and that's complicating things too. I think if there was a real projection and the cap would have gone up meaningfully this year, you could have had a proper projection as to what to pay these guys. But without knowing that number now, that has made it harder for sure.
All right. So with all these new additions, what do you think is the next move for Treliving? I guess, is it to reshape the defense? Like to try and, is that the next thing you think that he's going to try and do?
I would think so, but I don't know how you do it without moving money out at this point, right? Like that's the hard part. Like I looked at the defense right now, you know, TJ Brody's at that 5 million. People are talking about him as a buyout candidate, but I don't see that happening. Yeah. It's one of those things where they have what they have and there's a unique mix there and they can add some guys. Like they added Max Lajoie as a depth defenseman that kind of went under the radar. I believe he ended the season in the playoffs with the Carolina Hurricanes, if I remember correctly. So like there's some things there, but maybe that happens only if they decide they have to trade somebody. And it's clear that there is a log jam and they want to make some sort of move and there's other guys who don't want to go somewhere. And then, they could possibly do it that way. But I don't see anyone on the free agent market that's going to make a huge difference there. So maybe a trade is possible. Maybe there is something along those lines, but I don't know how much he can do right now, but I'm sure he'll insert himself into every conversation with anyone who he likes that seems to not necessarily want to commit or is making themselves available. And then maybe something gets worked out there. But I can see right now the roster kind of being somewhat set unless something happens from an extension standpoint. There's something where they're like, okay, I got to make a move or there's just something too good to be true. That changes the dynamic of it. Like it can change on a whim, but right now it's hard to see this roster not being the roster going into the season without injuries or issues.
I guess if you look at, let's say, Mark Giordano specifically, just because he was, obviously he's 39, so he was showing his age a little bit. Like, do you think, like, can Sheldon Keefe do like a load management with him? He's the perfect candidate, I think, for a load. Like, he still has game left in him, obviously, and he wants the game to play. But I don't, by doing load, like, there's nobody. I'm just thinking, like, on that third, basically the third pairing would be Liljegren and Giordano. That's what.
I don't know if load management is necessarily the best thing for Mark Giordano.
No.
only because in just my observations of him last year, he is the anomaly in terms of sports science and medicine and rest and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's even said it where he likes to just stay on the hamster wheel. Like, the moment you let off, like, it stops. But he did do load management when the Leafs had all those defensemen last year. And then toward the end of the year, he said he was dealing with something, or Sheldon Keefe said he was dealing with something that he didn't play in that last game against the Rangers, I remember.
Okay.
But then in the playoffs, he said he was fully healthy. And that was the worst we had seen of Mark Giordano all season long. Like, to the point where he was the seventh defenseman. And I think it was out of respect that they just weren't going to scratch him. Like, in a normal six defense pair situation, if it was anyone else who was seven, you would just go 12 and six. But because it was Mark Giordano, and given everything else, I think there was a respect thing. So I was always concerned when you have the oldest player in the league that you just never know when it's going to stop. Like, you just never know. And it's like, at that age, it's not precipitous. It's just one day you wake up and it's not there. And so I wonder what has been happening this season for him to kind of show that he can get back on track. And so he'll get that opportunity. But if he plays like he did toward the playoff to start, then that's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. But it's a mild cap commitment. That's an easy contract to not worry about. And then they can kind of do the Jason Spezza thing where if they do put him on waivers to save the cap space, the team, they could just make it clear any team that takes him, he's just going to terminate and not play. And then they just do another thing. Like, that's an easy solution.
We got rid of Justin Hall, right?
So Justin Hall got a lot of money, and Detroit has done some really interesting things.
Yeah.
Don't know if it's going to work out. There's a lot of depth adds there. So there's no Justin Hall. That's the big change on defense. So there isn't that solution. But, you know, outside of that, I'm really curious to see how Sheldon Keefe operates his team without Kyle Dubas there. Like, this is the first time we're going to see a Sheldon Keefe without that kind of influence. I'm curious to see if it's different. Like, we know the staff's different, but outside of that, yeah, I'm curious.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about that on our show in previous episodes too, that it's a chance to see for him, like, who he is and what he is with a different sounding board than what he's used to having. So it could be even better for him, potentially.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. I still wonder about that. Brendan Shanahan is still kind of like up here. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, but I am curious about it to see if he does things a little bit differently. Like, I always go back to the times where, like, I remember being in New York in January 2022 when the Leafs lost in the third period. Funny enough, Ryan Reeve scored two of those goals. And then Sheldon Keefe tore into the team and said his team played soft and purposeless.
Yeah.
And then the very next day in a practice in Long Island, he had to walk back those comments. And me personally, I don't think he should have. I felt he was totally right in the assessment. And I always wondered if it was different people around, if he would have. So I don't know. That's just, I don't know if it would have been any different. But these are the things we're going to watch for in Sheldon Keefe in terms of how he handles things going into the season, because we've seen him on edge when the team has not got out to strong starts. And the last two seasons have both been tests of that. We always forget because the regular season looks good in the end, but both of those seasons started very, very wrong. Mm-hmm. And so you wonder how this will start, and we'll see. will see his patience with this, because, you know, he was left twisting in the wind to not know if he was going to come back this season. Yeah. He got the go ahead. There's a couple of new assistants now. And one of those assistants was going to be handpicked by Brendan Shannon to be the head coach back in 2015, and hasn't been around the league except for analyzing it on TV for the last few years. So I am very curious to see this dynamic.
Yeah. Guy Boucher you're talking about there. And and then what was the other? Mike Van Ryan.
Yeah. And so what was really interesting about that was the press release came out, and you know, we knew there was an opening for one, and it wasn't clear in terms of who was going to do what. Yeah. And then Sheldon Keefe did make himself available and then explained it. But to me, the most puzzling thing about this is you have two defensive coaches now. Like that kind of do the same thing, although one is going to handle more of the PK and one's going to handle more of the defense. And it just, it's odd. the Manny Malhotra in the booth, fine, I get it. They did kind of have that in Paul McLean. That kind of makes sense. But it's odd to have two defensive coaches there now. And I'm really curious to see this dynamic, because it almost seems like you have the pieces in place in the event you need to make some sort of change. But I'm not necessarily saying that's going to happen. But, you know, just given where Sheldon Keefe came from at the end of the year, and just given how close Guy Boucher came to being head coach of the Maple Leafs back in 2015, it's certainly interesting for sure.
Yeah, but bottom line, it's up to the players, though. It's not they've been here for long enough now. I think this is going to be going into the eighth year of the Shanna plan, or however they want to call it. And they're the ones that need to get it done. They're on the ice, and you can have however many coaches, assistant coaches. It's up to the players on the ice to do it. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Lots of time.
So let's wrap things up a little bit, and we're going to do a little rapid fire kind of question period here with you. So you may or may not know, our show is all about the fans and for the fans. So we like to get to know a little bit about the fan in our guests. So you up for it?
Yes.
All right. Let's go. Okay. So Chris, take it away with the first one.
All right. So to start, easy one to start. Who was your favorite hockey player growing up?
Ooh, okay. I have kind of two answers of this. One's a Leaf, one's not a Leaf. My favorite Leaf was Felix Potvin. Well, I guess he became a Leaf, the other guy I'm going to talk about, but not when he was with the Leafs. The other guy was Owen Nolan. I always loved Owen Nolan when he was like, you know, I was a video game guy. Like, I loved that goal he scored on Hasek in that All-Star game where he Babe Ruth pointed at it. Yeah. And then I remember when the Leafs acquired Owen Nolan, even though it was a bad trade in hindsight, I was so excited I got his jersey that day. Like, cool. I was so my favorite player kind of growing up was kind of Felix Potvin on the Leafs, because I was a goalie. I was playing goal at that time, and I liked the whole cat persona. And he was the last of the acrobatic goalies. Like, as they moved over to the butterfly, I feel like he struggled with that, because he was all reflexive and reactive. And, you know, Patrick Waugh was able to adjust to it, but a lot of goalies like Potvin didn't. And you saw a real change there. So yeah, that's my answer. Like Potvin, and then non-Leaf Owen Nolan era.
All right.
Okay. So other than hockey, do you have any other sports that you love? So like, what's your like second go-to?
Yeah, football for sure. Like, I'm wearing a Detroit Lions hat. I actually thought in my career I was going to be an NFL reporter. Like, when I was working at the Fan back in the day, I was actually assigned to cover the Bills-Toronto series back in 2008. Okay. It really did look like an NFL team was imminent coming to Toronto, just given the money that Rodgers was pumping into the Bills. And I was going to Bills training camp a lot and going to every home game, whether it was in Toronto and Buffalo. And I had come up doing a lot of football. I used to call football games at Western for the campus radio station. And like, play-by-play is still a passion of mine and all that stuff. So for me, it was football was always kind of number one in that regard. And I love it. I love the way the NFL kind of does things. And I was a big Barry Sanders fan growing up, which is why I'm a Detroit Lions fan. So football is definitely my go-to. But I love all sports. Like, I can watch anything almost.
I'm with you on that. I'm like that, too. I like everything.
The FIFA FIFA Women's Cup, I guess, is the soccer.
I've been watching that right now. Yeah. I've been watching that when it's been on at a suitable time, of course, just because the time change, and just been following the whole like drama behind the ladies not making themselves available for media, which seems to be a story now. So I'm just kind of curious about that, just because I know they're trying to grow the game. So I wonder if it was counterintuitive to that. Who knows? We'll see what happens. Yeah. But that's going to be a big game. They need at least a point against a really good team. So that's going to be tough.
Yeah. All right. So you travel a lot, obviously, following the Leafs every game at home, on the road. What's your favorite road city and why?
Oh, I have several, but my number one is New York. Like it will always will be. It's my favorite city, even when I'm not traveling for work. Like I love the energy of living in a big city. I love like when you go to games, like the passionate fan base. New Yorkers are really passionate. Like you can hear and feel all the emotion. Sometimes I wish there was more of that at Scotiabank Arena, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I love going to New York. In 2012, like I have extended family who live there, but in 2012, Sportsnet sent me to cover lockout negotiations in New York, where I almost spent a full month there. And, and like, I just felt like a kid in a candy store. I loved it. It was great. I love everything about the energy of New York City. That's my number one.
I'm with you. You can feel it. Like as soon as you like, you know, we went actually to see a New Jersey game one time, but we went to New York for the day. And like, as soon as we went through to the, and got off at the other end at the Port Authority, like you could just feel it. It's like got a vibe. And I love New York as well, but we have not been to a game at MSG yet. So that is on our list.
Yes, you have to. I've been to an MSG. I actually, the first Golden Knights game I got to see, there were a couple of years where I wasn't covering the Leafs. And in 2017, I went to go see the Rangers and Golden Knights at MSG, that in their first year.
Oh, wow.
And I just loved it. The energy of MSG is phenomenal. You got to do it.
Okay, that's on the list.
That building, when you just look at that wagon wheel in the room, you can feel the history. Like, well, you have the vibes in the city. You get more of the vibes when you walk into that arena.
Then there's so few rinks like that now, right? So, you know, it's definitely on our list. Okay, so we've noticed that you post lots of food from different rinks that you visit.
That's my TikTok.
In your opinion, which NHL arena has the best food? And what's your favorite go-to item that you have to have?
Yeah. Okay. So number one, and this pains me, even though there's a preseason game in Detroit this year, which I'm not 100% certain I'll go. I probably will. But this year, the Leafs do not have a regular season game in Detroit because they're playing that game in Sweden, which I'm not complaining about. Yeah. That's going to be cool in its own right. But the Detroit media meal is in a whole other echelon within itself compared to any other league. It is not just a Little Caesars pizza, because it is Little Caesars and all that. First off, you're getting the best version of that. That's like if someone at McDonald's handmade your Big Mac to look like how it would on a commercial. So that's one. But two, like I shared it on the story, but it is just this long buffet that just goes forever with like salad, different, like six different proteins to choose from, like everything, so many desserts. It is right up there. It is so amazing. And now at talking about it, I am going to make sure I am missing a few days of the preseason this year for the first time. Look, I'll still be at every other game, but for the preseason, I'm a huge U2 fan, and they're playing the MSG Sphere. And a colleague of mine got tickets for the opener on September 29th.
Awesome.
So I haven't seen them since they in years, because they didn't tour after the pandemic yet. So anyway, I'm deviating, but Detroit is hands down amazing, and I'm getting hungry just even talking about it, because it is around lunchtime.
Me too.
Little Caesars Arena there is
a great building too.
We've been there, and that is, it is a fantastic building. Yeah.
It is. I'm actually going to Detroit next weekend for SummerSlam with some friends. I'm excited to just kind of walk around downtown Detroit. It's a great city now. Like there's just a lot to do. And I have friends who, whether it's housing or whatever, just decided to move closer to the border there, like whether it's Windsor or whatever. So they have all the real estate, but then have all the big city amenities across the border.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've really changed that area of downtown Detroit. So yeah, no, we definitely want to get back there again.
I got to go to a Lions game, but it hasn't fit to the schedule. That's the hard part.
All right. So last question for you, I guess getting back into the Leafs, though, do you think the Leafs right now are better or worse going into the 23-24 season?
I think they're better. Yeah. And so I'll end it on this. The one thing I like that Brad Treliving has done that Kyle Dubas didn't really do in his tenure as general manager is, and this is not a knock on Kyle at all, by the way. I think he did a really good job in Toronto. With Brad Treliving, the signings that he has made, you know exactly what those players are. There is no doubt about what those players are and their roles. Mm-hmm. Like maybe there's a little bit of interpretation as to where Max Domi fits in because he can kind of play both. Mm-hmm. But you know what he is. You know what he's capable of. Under Dubas, because of cap constraints and all these other things, there were a lot of these money puck type bets. A lot of them worked. Some of them didn't. Michael Bunting worked. Nick Ritchie didn't. Like there were a lot of, but the pluses outweighed the minuses. And then there was a solution that the Leafs were able to figure out for when it didn't work. Like even with Peter Mrazek didn't work, but they were able to figure out a way outside of Mrazek's obligations by trading him to Chicago and moving 13 spots down. What I like this time around is when I go into it, I see these players and I know exactly what they are. And so for that reason, I do think they are better this year, but there are massive long-term questions about this team. Like that's the big problem right now. But for this upcoming season, I do think they're better. I like the moves, but I like that there is a, you know exactly what they got. In John Klingberg, there's defensive issues, but you have a guy now who is undisputed the number one PP guy for this year. Like there is no question who's going to be on PP1 for this year, where that was always up for debate. You know that Tyler Bertuzzi is going to be a top six winger that brings that snot, piss, and vinegar. I call him Jim. That's the I knew it. I made those mistakes before. That Brad Treliving has done. So there's a difference. There's things that maybe the regular season won't be as good, but I like how they're suited for the playoffs. Like I've always felt people discount what the regular season and the playoffs are. And like, I was the only, like, I'm going to pat myself on the back here. I was the only person who predicted Florida over Boston. And then I predicted Florida over Toronto too. I have the Twitter receipt for that. But like, I do think there is a recognition that they have to add some things that make them better for the playoffs. And I like the moves because you know exactly what you're getting in those four big guys that they got.
Okay. Right. That's a good spot to end it on.
Yeah.
So we both thank you, David, so much for coming on our show. And we hope to have you on again at some point.
It'll be my pleasure.
If you can fit us in, because your schedule is like so busy. So, we will try to make it work.
Yeah.
Anyway, everybody, you can keep up to date with the Leafs during the summer and all season long by following David on Twitter. His handle is @DAlter, and find his podcast Rinkwide Toronto wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Also, be sure to check out David's articles on the Leafs at thehockeynewsandsi.com. So thanks so much, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks so much for having me on. It was my pleasure.
So thanks again to David Alter for joining us for our patio season. It was great. David has a wealth of information. He can talk Leafs forever, basically, really. And he's in the dressing room. Like the listeners there, I'm sure they seen him asking questions of Sheldon Keefe and at the press conferences. So yeah, it was great to have him on.
Yeah, beyond that, like he really does his homework. Like he is up on all his facts. And we did discover he is a perfect go-to for anything cap related because by his own admission, he is a math whiz. So that's super helpful. Anyway, before we go, we want to give a shout out to some of our listeners. And in this time around, we're going to give a shout out to our listeners in the US. Chris, did you know this month our listeners in the US actually eclipsed our Canadian listeners by a very small margin?
Yeah. So I was really surprised when Syl told me that. I was like, wow.
So it just goes to show that US listeners are starved for Leaf content during the summer. So we are happy to provide. So anyway, just a reminder to everyone, just to hit that follow button wherever you listen to our show, Apple, Spotify, or your favorite app. That way you're not going to miss any content. And you can also find us on the Believe Network at believe.com or on our website, ladiestalkingleafs.com.
And be sure to follow us on social media. We are on Threads, the new social media platform. So just check us out there, as well as Twitter or X, whatever Elon Musk wants to call us Instagram and Facebook. Our handle is at LTL1917. Check us out there. And we'd love to hear from you too, our listeners, right? So leave us a rating or review and let us know what you think of the show. It's easy on Apple and Spotify, and it's important for our show to get more exposure as a source for Leafs content. And we thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, don't forget that you can easily leave us comments on YouTube, and that is just great for our community to basically keep the dialogue going and just get to know each other and talk about everything to do with the Leafs. Anyway, another way to help us is by visiting our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can support us by buying us a coffee. Any donation goes to helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. So you can find the link to our Ko-fi page on any of our social media platform pages or our show notes.
Yeah. And as always, we want to take the time to thank our healthcare workers and first responders for everything that they do.
And we want to thank you, as always, for listening and watching. Till next time, go Leafs, go!
Leafs, go.
Do you believe?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.